Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit. Welcome everyone to another episode of the GeoMob Podcast. Today we're going to introduce a new host who is going to be joining us, just to lay it all out right there. We have been doing some thinking about how we take the podcast forward and how we bring in some new voices and some new expertise. And I am very pleased to introduce Alistair Graham, who will now henceforth be our man for all things Earth observation. Alistair, welcome to the show.
Hi there. It's great to be back podcasting, and it's great to be a part of the GeoMob podcast as well. I'm really looking forward to this. I think it's going to be a fascinating future. Just like you say, talking about Earth observation things, there's so much happening in the sector at the moment.
And I've got to...
Well, let's say, of course, a hello to you as well, Stephen.
Yeah, hi. Hi, Ed, and welcome, Alistair. I'm really excited that you've joined us on this podcast, because I've been babbling a bit about Earth observation, and I know less than nothing about Earth observation. And now we've got somebody who really does understand this space, who's podcasted in the past about it. So it's really great to have you here. It's also great to have another friend, a Phosphogy fan and participant on the podcast with us. So welcome to the podcast from me as well, Alistair.
Thank you. Yes, if I can shoehorn in some Phosphogy stuff as well along the way, that would be really good.
It would be,
definitely.
Yeah.
Alistair, listeners may know you from your former podcast, Seen from Above, which I'm pleased to say I was a listener of, but that you did for several years, which of course focused on all things Earth observation. So tell us a bit about your background, your experience with that podcast, and then why you eventually stopped doing it, and maybe then why you're joining us here, why you're back in the podcasting game.
Okay, yeah, cool. Background. I've been in geospatial, and I guess specifically Earth observation, for about 25 years, coming up for 25 years. God, that sounds a long time now. So much has changed over that period of time, which hopefully we can get into both maybe in this conversation, but certainly in some of the conversations I'll be having with people on the podcast in future. I started off with an academic bent, as so many people do, doing a PhD and postdoc and all of that sort of stuff, and then moved out into the commercial world, mainly large corporates right at the beginning, and then a couple of SMEs. Had a really great time, actually, with at the time, small company that was trying to do aerial photography, and I was part of a team that was trying to count seabirds over the sea for what were going to be wind turbines, farms for wind turbines. And it's quite interesting in that, like, those turbines are now all built. And so the work that I was initially doing, trying to work out sort of how you can speciate birds and how you can count them and all of that from very high resolution aerial photography, like, that played a part in the infrastructure that we now have in the UK. So that was quite cool. Then I worked as an independent for about 9-10 years, something like that, and I've done a couple of other jobs since then, running different companies, and I'm back freelancing at the moment. And yeah, I just love podcasting, really. I did Seen from Above for about 4 years with Andrew Cutts, and we really enjoyed it, but it got to a point where everything else in life was just piling on as well. And I'm sure you guys know exactly what it's like, where you feel that you owe a sort of almost like a series of continuation to the listeners. You know, you know that you want to get something out every 3 weeks or every 2 weeks or whatever it is that your release cycle is. And there's just so much pressure from everywhere else. So Andrew and I actually passed it on. And it's survived for another year or two. Ladies of Landsat and Sisters of SAR took that on, and there's some really good episodes, actually. And one of the ones that really stuck in my mind was they did an episode in Portuguese interviewing someone in Brazil. And apparently the download numbers for that were huge. So that just shows it's not always about people in Europe talking about the technology and stuff. There's some really, really good opportunities, I think, for a diverse range of voices, but also a diverse set of podcasts to come out. And yeah, I just got to a point where I miss talking to people about cool technology. So that's why I was looking to come back into podcasting, really.
Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Indeed, welcome. So the plan is, you know, every 4 to 6 weeks, you'll be interviewing someone from the Earth observation field. I'm sure you have a long backlog of guests that you want to bring on the show, and we'll hopefully cover a bit more of all the exciting things happening there in that space. So,
yeah, I've definitely got some ideas about who I want to talk to, and I want to make sure that it's a mix as well between technology and also sort of applications, as well as a little bit about the community. So a lot's happened since I was last doing Seen From Above. So Twitter has sort of imploded completely. So what was a very, very vibrant Earth observation sort of community on Twitter, I'm sure it's still there in some form, but I no longer use Twitter. I know a lot of people in my sort of social work group also have stopped using Twitter. And so I'm guessing that whole community side of things has fragmented a little bit. It'd be really interesting for me to find out what's happening, how people are staying in touch, how new ideas are getting communicated, and all of that sort of stuff.
We, over the last years, we've had many interesting talks at GeoMob events in different cities about all the interesting things happening in Earth observation. I guess mainly driven by the fact that it's become so much easier to get this imagery, you know, because there are more satellites, because there are drones and things. But one topic that comes up again and again is, of course, how to make the industry commercially viable, and how to find actual customers who are willing to pay, not just as a one off, of course, but as an ongoing revenue stream. What are your thoughts on that, or what's the current state of the industry as you see it?
Well, there's a sort of ongoing joke, and I'll be honest, it's been ongoing for nearly 15 years now, about how if you want to make it commercially in Earth observation, then you basically need to sell into defense, and particularly on the data side. And I think that's still pretty much the state of affairs for the data providers. However, like the cost of launching satellites has really decreased. And I listened to your recent discussion with Phil Cooper, actually, and he was saying exactly the same thing, that the cost of getting something up into space whereby you can then get your own data has massively decreased. And that really does change the commercial models that are out there. There's a company called Umbra, which you may or may not have come across, that also is doing some really interesting work about making its satellite imagery at a certain scale. It's making its satellite its radar imagery available openly, and I think there's this whole opportunity at the moment for organizations and companies to just think in a totally new way about how they approach both the processing side of things, but also the data collection side of things. So, yeah, as I've sort of said for 5 years or so, everything's up in the air at the moment, but it continues to be, and it's really interesting. Certain things are starting to consolidate, but it's a very exciting time, I've got to say.
It always puzzles me. There must have been billions and billions of pounds invested in getting satellites up there that are generating imagery. And the moment you stick a satellite into space, it starts to become redundant because somebody invents new sensors which are more accurate, higher resolution, detecting different things, and they've got to put those up in another satellite because they can't send them up and add them to the existing satellite. So there must be thousands and thousands of satellites that are still orbiting and working, but technically they're degrading and new stuff is replacing them. It seems challenging to make an economic model that will work in that kind of an environment because you can't add enhancements to them once they're launched.
Yeah, I mean, so you can't add physical enhancements to them. What I'm not sure about is whether or not people are actually doing software upgrades to some of the satellites and being able to improve on the imagery there. I know that some of the sort of deep space satellites, they get software improvements that improve either the way that they are flying or the way that they collect data. So I would be very surprised if that's not also happening on some of the, certainly some of the more modern, more commercially focused Earth observation satellites.
I think it was about a year ago or so, we had a talk in Barcelona from a company working with balloons. Okay. So the whole idea was that you would have the, you know, very high altitude balloons. But it, for exactly that reason, Steve, is that they could, you know, you could, the balloon comes back down and then you can, you know, put a different device on it. And that's one thing that's never really entirely been clear to me is like, you know, I understand some of the benefits of satellites, but how is it better than just using, I mean, now with you have these cheap drones that you can put cameras on or whatever. Why is a satellite better? Why can't you just put the sensor on a balloon or a drone or an airplane? I've never really got that.
Well, that's the thing. You can put that sensor wherever you want to put it. And there are different reasons why you would maybe want to put it in different sort of collection mechanisms. So, I mean, with the satellites, depending again on which orbit you go for, you have hopefully stability of the orbit and stability of your collection. You get to know exactly when you're going over somewhere, and you get to know sort of the regularity and the repeat. That's all planned when you're building the orbit. So that allows you to then build up time series, and the time series, you know, will be comparable. Each image will be comparable as it's collected. I mean, you could quite easily, and many companies do for testing, stick the same sensor into an aircraft or onto a balloon, and then you are able to interact with the hardware in that way, but you get different information back because you're not always going to be coming at a site or a target in exactly the same way. You might be at slightly different heights, you might be at slightly different directions and things like that. And there might be slightly different sort of conditions in terms of what's above you in the atmosphere. So there's all sorts of different reasons about why people choose to go for one or other of the different platforms. I think it's, I've been really interested in the whole growth of drones. And it was funny to think that right at the beginning of the sort of commercial drone sort of takeoff of the sector, if you pardon the pun, was there was a lot of people sort of saying like, oh, this will never really catch on, this won't be a big thing, and yet look at it, I mean, it's huge, and particularly for mapping. So I think what we need to always make sure is that we're not being skeptical about the different methods of collection and what the data can do. There will always be a need for people to see something in the data. And you might not know it right now, but at some point someone will go, actually, that data is really useful. And I want to buy that, please.
Well, at our last Barcelona event, again, I mean, there are quite a few Earth observation people in and around Barcelona. But at our last event, there was an interesting talk where he made the point that the challenge, you know, the challenge is not now getting the data. The challenge is customers or potential customers have no awareness of what's even possible these days. I mean, it feels like science fiction to them. And as a result, there's no demand from customers because they can't even conceptualize, you know, what the technology now makes possible. And so the argument was that we need to have the industry, the Earth observation industry, needs to be working much more on education of potential customers and also just development of very pure kind of use cases that really demonstrate to, you know, whichever sector it is that might be using this information, what is even conceivable. Because I basically just made the point that the technology has moved so far ahead of consumer expectations that the consumers can't even grasp what might be available.
So you took me back then, Ed, to desktop GIS 25 years ago, right? And I was working for a map info reseller, and we used to go to trade shows and things, and we would demonstrate taking a spreadsheet and geocoding a spreadsheet so that you could put customer points or store points onto a map. And it was like a wow moment for people who had no idea what they could do with GIS in the commercial space. But the moment they saw that you could take a spreadsheet, and it wasn't as simple as it is today, but you could take a spreadsheet and put it on a map, suddenly a light bulb went on and they were going, could I do this? Could I do that sort of thing? So I think, you know, you're absolutely right. We're at a point where the clients, the, you know, whether it's financial services, whether it's agriculture, can't really imagine the things that we could do with Earth observation. And it needs a few breakthrough applications, and suddenly the whole thing will take off. You know, smart farming or something, you know, when people actually see the results of sort of smart farming and that kind of thing, it will make a big difference.
Yeah, and I think I agree with all those points. And I think that when we get to a company that just generates something as a product or as a service that doesn't mention Earth observation, then I think that will be one of the breakthroughs as well. So, for instance, I was talking to someone recently and they wanted to know basically the length of hedgerow in a certain site. And not only that, they needed to count the number of standard trees within the hedgerow, and they wanted to know whether the trees were healthy or not healthy. And there's loads of different ways that you could approach this, but they didn't need to know anything about aerial data or satellite data or Earth observation or AI type processing. Basically, all they needed was a map of their area, and they needed some lengths. So they needed basically the lengths of the hedgerow. They needed also a count of the trees, and they needed a sort of red, yellow, green type of classification of those trees. Almost everyone I know in Earth observation would want to tell them about the cool stuff that's happening in Earth observation. And I'm including myself in that. I want them to know how amazing it is, all the stuff that happens in the background. But I think that if that client was able to just get whatever numbers they needed, and not have to think about, oh, is it Earth observation, is it not, but also understand that there is a huge sort of processing cost behind getting those numbers. So it's not going to be a case of, oh, well, I just pay my 25 quid and I get my answers. Then I think, you know, that could be a real breakthrough, is just taking the Earth observation out of Earth observation, which I hate myself for saying that, given that I am a huge proponent of Earth observation. But I think that would really, really free up the customers and the clients to start asking more and more questions, because they don't have to think on their side, well, is it possible? They just have to ask, this is what I want.
Well, this suggests that the path forward should be people should start companies that, you know, focus on one sector or one industry or whatever, and, you know, just focus on saying, you know, whatever, we're the service that helps the forestry industry. And actually, we have had an interview with a company in Finland that kind of does this, where, you know, how they do the magic of determining are the trees healthy or whatever, the customer really doesn't care at the end of the day, whether that's being done via Earth observation or, you know, whether they send a person out to inspect it or whatever. All they care is that it's correct and, you know, the price is reasonable.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's probably the gap right now, is that on the one hand, you have this amazing technology, but you don't have the people in industry-specific knowledge yet that have adopted that technology and bundled it up into a coherent solution for the customer, you know, a very straightforward product that the customer can just say, I need that. Fine, let me buy it.
So your former boss, Will Cadell, who we've interviewed on the podcast, he's one of the best thinkers and talkers about the business of Earth observation and geo that I know. And he sort of set out a while back the dichotomy between creating products that solve a problem that you then sell to multiple people and engaging in a consultancy style business with each organization to solve their specific problem. And if I'm quoting him correctly, and Will, when you're listening to this, if I've got it wrong, come on the podcast and correct me, because it's a while back that we had this conversation. Will was saying there aren't sort of general generally, you can't create these generalized products. You know, tree counting in Finland is different to tree counting in the Amazon, for example. You know, you think you can design a thing that will count trees and measure their health, but actually trees in Finland are very different to trees in the Amazon, and it just doesn't work, you know. And what you really need to do is engage with the client, identify their problems, and deliver a solution to them, and not try and create these general purpose repetitive solutions. I don't know, you worked for him for a while, but you're not working for him now, so you're free to speak, Alistair.
No, I agree with him. And that, in part, that's sort of why I like being freelance as well, is I get to engage with people and their problems and try and work a way forward for them. In terms of your tree example as well, there's a good reason why looking at palm oil plantations was sort of one of the first applications, because they're nice and simple to count trees there. I definitely think... If as a sector we concentrate on trying to generate products, then we run the risk of generating products that nobody wants. And I think that has come up multiple times. I mean, maybe not in terms of commercial products, but certainly in terms of sort of projects. And the sector for a long time was very heavily project based in terms of just trying to understand what can be done and what can't be done. And there's a lot of projects that have had funding and then at the end of it just get shelved because there's no one's interested in what's going on. And I think from a commercial perspective, there's a real danger in terms of products that happens. So I agree with Will, definitely. In terms of services, I think also we need to be, as a sector, we need to be quite savvy in terms of how we do that consultancy. So I think there's going to be a lot of interacting with the client and in particular with their data and their data scientists, which doesn't necessarily happen, I don't think, in other types of consultancy where you might go in and say, well, here's the thing that we've looked at and here's the answer. I think from an Earth observation perspective, certainly on a sector level, what you're trying to do is bring in your expertise around how you might help them with their workflow and make that whole situation both run smoother, but or also how you can add value to what they're currently doing by adding in at different stages, maybe along their workflow, different types of Earth observation data. So yeah, it's all about listening to clients, definitely.
What are the things in the industry right now that get you most excited, Alistair? What are what's the cutting edge kind of stuff that...
Well, so I'm still a sucker for a nice image. So when I was doing my A-levels, however many years ago, that was the thing that first got me attracted to Earth observation, was I saw an amazing, it's probably not that amazing anymore, but at the time it was an amazing image of the weather systems coming into the UK. And you could get them downloaded every half hour, and that just blew me away as well, that every half hour you'd get this image of the, say, a low pressure moving towards Wales, where I was living at the time. So yes, images of all different types, whether it's half the globe or whether it's right down to something that's just looking at a tiny site at, say, I don't know, 2 centimeters resolution or something like that, or maybe better these days, that still captivates me. But then I think the other thing is the sheer range of different sensors. So not only are you talking about optical types of sensors, and there's a whole plethora of things within that, but you've got hyperspectral sensors where you look at like hundreds, if not thousands, of different spectral wave bands. You've got radar that, and radar itself is not just radar as one big lump. There's a whole subcategories within that about what you can and can't use it for. LIDAR, sonar, there's so many different things. I absolutely love the fact that we can collect information about the world we live on by just basically pinging bits of light or radio waves or whatever, and collecting information that way. And then I guess the other thing that really keeps me excited is, I mean, hopefully you can tell from the way I'm speaking about it, I love Earth observation, but I am also the first to recognize I am never going to be the world's best Earth observation person. So I just love talking to other people about what they're doing. And in particular, the new generation of people coming through, a bit like Stephen. I mean, there's this whole stuff around AI and all sorts of other things and huge data lakes. And it's like, I get what they're talking about, but you know, there are some people doing some absolutely stunning stuff. And you look at the results and you just think, that is absolutely brilliant. It absolutely nails what we were talking about 10, 15 years ago. And now people are doing it. And it really heartens me to think, well, what are we talking about now that in 10 or 15 years time is going to be the thing that the next generation is doing? So, yeah, that whole community, I just love finding out what they're doing.
That there is definitely an element of science fiction to some of the Earth observation stuff. Yes. When you think about how, I mean, it's just amazing how what the sensors can see. And, you know, when you think about the technologies that are needed to make that happen with the satellite whizzing around the Earth, and yet it's still, you know, able to find all these small things. I mean, unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And also the whole idea that you've got this sort of ball flying around in space, orbiting the Earth, taking pictures of some sort, and then you've got to get them down to the Earth, right? And how you get them down to the Earth, and how you process them, and how you get them to the customer. And more, time is of the essence in this stuff. You know, I mean, for lots of applications, the sort of lag between capturing the data and having the data available to use is down to, if not minutes, certainly an hour, which is quite, you know, I mean, the idea that you can do this is just, it really is science fiction, you know. I mean, yeah, it's almost beam me up, Scotty, or beam me down, Scotty.
Yeah, exactly. And people very rarely think about that side of things as well. They think about the data that's in front of them, and they may consider the satellite that actually collected it, or the system that collected it. But that whole infrastructure sort of back end side of things, in order to get to move the data around, to store the data, to enable people to access it so they can do what they want to do in terms of data science on it. Yeah, that's very rarely talked about, and I think that's a definite sort of area and sector that we should talk about more, maybe.
I think you're going to have to do more than one every 6 weeks, Alistair.
Yes, exciting times ahead. I'm very much looking forward to seeing who you get on the show and listening to the episodes, Alistair. So welcome. That's once again.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, both.
I guess, shall we wrap it up there? What is the best way for people to get in touch with you if they, you know, if they want to volunteer to be on the show, or if they have questions, or how can they reach you?
So probably the best way is either LinkedIn or Mastodon. I'll send you some links, and you can put those in the show notes.
We'll put them in the show notes, of course. Yeah. Of course.
So. I do still have a Twitter account, but it's been dormant for over a year. So definitely not that. So yeah, LinkedIn and Mastodon, the two places I tend to hang out most.
So I think I am about to take the step of switching. I have a dormant Twitter account, which just gets reposts of the Mappery stuff, and I haven't actually personally posted on there for 18 months, and I think it's time to switch the thing off.
But you know what the problem is, Stephen? If you delete your Twitter account, it becomes available for someone else to claim that address, and then they could very, you know, they could impersonate you.
Ah! You serious?
I am. Of course I'm serious.
So you mean you want to keep the account, even if you're not posting to it, you've still got to keep it?
Well, or you accept that someone else can steal your account. I mean, which obviously is a huge, you know, phishing risk. So,
yeah, no, I think, all right. Note the the 180 degree rotation then on my Twitter account. But like you, Alistair, I don't use it, but I'll keep it.
Yeah. So, yeah, sorry, no simple solution there. So.
Okay.
All right, well, let's wrap it up there then. Once again, welcome to the show, Alistair. Great to have you on board. And yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks.
And let's have an open source conversation soon as well on the podcast, Alistair.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
We'll do that. Okay. Take care.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Cheers. Bye.
Thanks for joining us today on the GeoMob podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. While you're there, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter and find links to our accounts on Mastodon and LinkedIn so that you can stay up to date on all our upcoming events. Hope to see you at an event soon.